Hi everyone, it's Kevin J, the best thing since the lake. And you're listening to The Therapy Suite right here on UKF Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I speak to Victoria Wright, PhD, who is a natural woman's health expert. She's a National Institute of Medical Herbalists accredited consultant. She's also a functional medicine practitioner and health coach with over 10 years of experience. Victoria, I'm running out of breath. How are you doing? You all right?
Hello, I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. How's your week been?
It's been really nice.
That's good. Really, that's good. And thank you for taking the time, you know, to talk to us about the menopause. I have done a few shows on this, but you know what? I think it's always really good to raise awareness around it. I think it's something, it's an area that, you know, we need to raise more awareness around. I mean, as you know, menopause and perimenopause is big news these days, from Davina McCall raising awareness of the plight of many ladies to HRT shortages. But look, let's start with you. Talk to us. Tell us a bit about your background and how you got to where you are today.
Oh, that's interesting. So I was a geeky research scientist. I was a particle physicist, or I started in particle physics, and I really wanted to help people. And I did all sorts of different things, moving into the health area, using my background. And then it just wasn't enough. So I decided to retrain and went and did a degree in herbal medicine and set up my practice, and I've been at it ever since.
That's fantastic. It's brilliant to be able to, you know, it must be really good to think, you know what, actually, I feel I'll be better in this area and be able to change. Because it takes a lot, isn't it, to, you know, you're on one path and then you're thinking, mm-hmm. Right, you know what, actually, I should actually take this path. And then you've got to transition and stuff, you know?
Yeah. But I think it was also it's a slow change. I really wanted to help people, and I knew after I did my PhD that that was what drove me. And I see so many people being poorly and not really understanding how to look after themselves, and having, you know, a health condition myself and trying to manage that. And, you know, don't get me wrong, the NHS and the hospitals were absolutely amazing. But unfortunately, women's health isn't really researched quite a lot. And there was just lack of understanding about the condition that I was managing, and even, you know, the sorts of things that I could do to help myself. So it was really important to actually go down that route and really understand, you know, all of the plights that women suffer that really aren't well understood.
Thank you. I think it's brilliant. I think it's, you know, it's wonderful that you're doing something that will benefit, you know, the community and everybody else, you know. Let's start with, what exactly is the menopause?
Okay. So the menopause, the medical definition of a menopause is that it's 1 year after a woman's menstrual periods have stopped. And so it can only really be diagnosed retrospectively. Now, it happens on average between the ages of 45 and 55, but it can, you know, the average age is around 50. Now, many women often notice hormonal changes 10 years or more before that. So some women in their 30s can even start noticing hormonal changes. And we call this, in lay terms, the perimenopause. And I think often that gets confused. So menopause and perimenopause are kind of used synonymously in common parlance. And so what actually happens is it's a decline of estrogen levels. Now, it's not quite as simple as that, because our hormones are a really, really complex picture. You know, we've got estrogen, but we've got other hormones such as follicle stimulating hormone, luteinizing hormone, progesterone, testosterone, and this is a whole mix of stuff about what we call the endocrine system. And as we get older, and this happens for men as well, our endocrine system starts to change, and there's this general reorganization, if you like, of all our hormone levels. And it's these changes that actually we notice as being what we commonly call the symptoms of menopause.
Gosh, what can you talk to us a bit about the symptoms of menopause? Because, I mean, the ladies have, I've had ladies tell me in the past about some of the symptoms, which, You know, like low moods is an example, my understanding is, can interrupt sleep. What are some of the other symptoms as well?
The problem is it's so varied. I mean, wide, you've got common ones such as hot flushes and night sweats and insomnia and the low mood that you've mentioned. But it can be things such as feeling anxious, and many women who've never felt anxious before in their lives suddenly have anxiety. It could be brain fog, not feeling like you've just lost your mojo a bit and you're not quite sure why. It could be forgetting things, and it's a really strange forgetting things. It's forgetting the names of things. It could be itchy skin, dry vaginas, high or low libido. It can go either way. But it could also be headaches. You know, there's all sorts of, or joint pain, all sorts of really weird things that can happen with the body. And if you really connect with the body and understand what's going on, you can start to notice what these are.
Does it affect nutrition health as well, as in eating routines or anything like that?
It doesn't necessarily affect nutritional health, but actually nutritional health is really, really important for the menopause. And there's lots of research to show that if you are in a good state nutritionally and from a stress point of view as well, prior to going into menopause, actually you're less likely to have symptoms.
Can the menopause lead to health conditions at all, you know?
Not necessarily. So there's a really big, interesting bit of research that's been done in Australia. And what they looked at, because there's a lot of talk about, declining estrogen levels can lead to a risk of osteoporosis.
That's what I was thinking about, yeah.
Now, whilst that is true, actually, what this Australian study found was that the best predictor, although you've got this declining estrogen picture, the best predictor of health status post-menopause is actually the state of your health prior to it. So if you look after yourself, you manage your stress levels, you eat well, you exercise regularly, all of these are more important predictors in terms of your post-menopause health than just going through the menopause itself.
That makes a lot of sense. When should women start to prepare themselves for the menopause?
Well, given that study, I'd say as early as possible. And the more we learn about our health and look after our health when we're younger, the smoother that transition will be.
I mean, what are some of the things that, you know, the ladies can do in preparation for?
So I would say there are four key things that are really important as we go into menopause. The first is managing our stress levels. So it's really important to look after ourselves. Now, life is stressful enough, but then you have women who get to sort of in their 40s and 50s, you know, they're coping often with children and the issues that children have. They're coping with elderly parents and the needs that they have. And, you know, on top of that, you know, there's a whole grief and sadness about loss of fertility. You know, bits start heading south, hair starts going grey, wrinkles start appearing. And all of a sudden you're in this like really, you know, stressful picture. So managing stress is really, really important. And we can talk about, you know, why that's important. Rest is really important, and we can talk about that a bit more. And then looking after our diet, and there's some key things that we can do to our diet that will really, really help. And then exercise. So things such as weight-bearing exercise to help reduce the risk of osteoporosis, building muscle. So going and lifting some middle weights. Now, estrogen is actually stored in fat, which may sound like a good idea when estrogen is declining, but actually it prevents the conversion of androgens, so other sex hormones, to estrogen. So we can end up with estrogen dominance, which can lead to certain types of cancer. So building muscle actually prevents it. And then cardio exercise, which is really good for the heart, and also good for dissipating those stress hormones and improving our mood as well.
Is there anything else, like, to reduce stress? Is there anything else that can be done to reduce stress?
There are so many things that can be done to reduce stress. It's such an important thing. And, you know, it could be anything from, you know, the rest thing is really important. But shall I just talk about rest? Because I'm big on rest. This is a thing that women don't tend to do. And there are different types of rest that we need in order to be able to really be at our best and help to keep our stress levels low. So you have physical rest, which is the stuff that we typically think of as rest. So that could be lying down, could be going to sleep, and that's passive rest. But you can also have an active physical type of rest. So that could be doing yoga or doing some stretching or a gentle walk or something like that. Now we have mental rest. So I don't know about you, but if you're doing too much and your mind's racing, then you struggle to get to sleep. And actually just resting our brains is a really important aspect. And there's loads of ways in which we can do that. We can take short breaks during the day. We can get having a notebook to write down, you know, the things that come into your head.
Like a journal?
Yeah, a journal, or even just, you know, a list of things that you need to remember, actually. Just writing them down when they come to you, and then they're out of your brain, they're on a piece of paper, you can come back to them later, and they're not there in your consciousness. And doing things like that throughout the day can actually help, when you get to the end of the day, feel like you're mentally rested. There is emotional rest. So, you know, taking time and space to process emotions can help prevent things such as overwhelm, can help prevent us getting into a stress type picture. Sensory rest, which is absolutely, you know, we've all experienced that during the whole COVID thing with the whole Zoom fatigue. And actually Zoom fatigue is actually just a, you know, sensory overload, really. You know, our lives were just consumed by being online. So, you know, taking a break from our phones, from computers, from the TV, is a really great way of, you know, having that sensory rest. Social rest, which I love, because who'd have thought spending time with your friends that make you feel good is a really nice way to rest. You know, we don't think of that as being important in terms of managing stress, managing our well-being, but you know, there's a huge amount of research that looks at, you know, our social connections, actually. And what they found is that people who have really strong social connections, so good friendships, and that they see them regularly and they're part of a community, actually live significantly longer than those that don't. So nurturing our relationships is really important. Creative rest, which is around, you know, it could be doing arts, it could be doing crafts, but actually just going and walking in nature, you know, that gives you that sensory rest. It gives you social rest if you're doing it with friends, or it could give you mental rest if you're doing it on your own. But it can be a really nice part of your day if you can find 10 minutes to just go and have a little walk around the park or something. And then finally, spiritual rest, which is particularly important as we get older, I think. Now, by spiritual rest, I mean like a sense of purpose or belonging. And yeah, as we get older, I think that becomes more prevalent. Now, if we've had careers, then a career has been a purpose, or looking after children has been a purpose. And, you know, as those careers, you know, come to their fruition, or we've start to think heading towards retirement, or children get older and leave home, that sense of purpose diminishes slightly. So finding part of a community, or finding ways to actually feel that sense of purpose in our life, is really important, particularly as we get older.
Thank you so much. You know, from what you said, it sounds like power napping would be beneficial as well, I'm assuming. Yeah. Would that be right? Yeah. Because it kind of gives just a rest during the day, maybe after work, half an hour, 45 minutes, just to give the mind a rest and that kind of thing, you know.
Definitely.
You know, which is brilliant. Thank you. Sorry, go on, you were saying.
I'm a huge fan of napping at the moment.
I do a bit of power napping as well, maybe a few times in the week, just to kind of, for about half an hour, 45 minutes, just to recharge and then go gym and that kind of thing, you know. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
Radio. UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ann and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So, Victoria, exercise, I know you mentioned as a way of, you know, preparing for the menopause. Are there, and I know weights, you were saying, helps. Are there any particular exercises you know of or routines or anything like that in those areas that would help at all?
I would say just do what, I'm not an exercise expert. Personal trainers can talk far more eloquently about it than I can. But basically just do something. You know, going out for a walk can be enough. You know, clearly there's getting your heart rate elevated, so that could be a walk up a hill. Like I said, doing some weight training or some weight bearing exercise, dancing, you know, just sticking some music on and dancing around the kitchen for 5 to 10 minutes, you know, brilliant way of getting some exercise into your day.
Absolutely, yeah, nothing like that. If that's not enough, are there any supplements out there or natural alternatives available at all?
So I see a lot of adverts because I work, you know, with a lot of menopause women. I'm always looking at what's out there. And I see a lot of adverts for really expensive cure-alls for menopause. And there's supplements that say, oh, take this and you'll have no menopause symptoms. In reality, if you look at the ingredients, they are just a multivitamin tablet, perhaps with a small amount of some sort of medicinal plant. But personally, I would save your money and concentrate on eating a really good, healthy diet. Now, for that, what that means is thinking about the types of things that you need in your body. So from a menopausal perspective, you know, thinking, reducing the amount of carbs that we're eating, increasing the amount of green leafy vegetables, but then there are other slight tweaks that we can take based on what symptoms we've got going on. So, you know, we talked about bone health and osteoporosis, so making sure we've got some calcium in our diet. So that could be from milk or other dairy, but if you don't eat dairy, then green leafy vegetables, salmon are also good sources of calcium. But also you need vitamin D as well. So it's important to get outside and get some exercise and spend some time outside. Vitamin D is probably the one supplement that I would really say maybe we should be taking in the winter in the Northern Hemisphere or where we are in the UK. Because that, you know, that's really important for our bone health. And let's face it, weather's pretty grim, low light, in particularly if you head up to Scotland. And, you know, so vitamin D maybe. For example, hot flushes, making sure that you have enough vitamin E and selenium in our diets. So from vitamin E, you can get it from nuts and seeds, again, green leafy vegetables. You'll find me talking a lot about green leafy vegetables because they're really, really important from a menopause perspective. Make friends with broccoli. Broccoli is your friend. And selenium, you can get that in Brazil nuts. So you can get your entire need for selenium in just a couple of Brazil nuts every day. And then, you know, for example, muscle aches and pains can be quite a problem. And often this can be a magnesium deficiency. Now, magnesium is a natural muscle relaxant. So, and it helps with energy production. So if we have a deficiency, we can often feel fatigue, as well as having slakes and pains. And this applies to men as well. It's not just for women. And, you know, if we smoke or if we drink alcohol, then actually that affects the magnesium uptake. Now, you can't really supplement with it because when you ingest it, it actually isn't very bioavailable. So the body doesn't absorb it very well. But things such as Epsom salt baths are great. A way of absorbing magnesium. Again, back to those green leafy vegetables, pumpkin seeds, almonds, cashew nuts, all really good sources of magnesium. And my favourite, of course, is 70% chocolate.
Of course, how can we forget about chocolate?
Square a chocolate a day, get some magnesium in your diet. It's a great excuse, isn't it?
You know, us guys like chocolate as well. We might not say it, but yeah. I know guys are like, they gym and all the rest of it, proper geezer, but they do like a bit of chocolate.
Yeah,
I like a bit of chocolate. I had some early on.
I would suggest everybody has a square of 70% chocolate in their diet. You know, it's really uplifting. Actually, there's some research about cocoa and how it actually can uplift you. It can give you a bit of an energy boost. It's got a bit of magnesium in there. Should be the next health food, right?
Absolutely, 100%. And you know, I'm always, when I'm shopping as well, I always look, it has to be 70% minimum, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's something to obviously important to bear in mind. So I'm always like, right, okay, it's got to be 70%. Okay, it can't be any less. And sometimes I've tried 80%, depends how bitter you want to go, you know. But HRT, hormone replacement therapy.
Yeah.
Now, I know I've done shows about this before, and it's been echoed how useful and helpful it is. Can we talk a bit about that?
So as a herbalist, I would say HRT can be very, very effective in some cases. And in some cases, it's exactly the right treatment. So if it's a premature menopause, if there are prior health problems, then it can be really the right thing and it's really important. But it's not the only option. And I think it's really important to look at, is the menopause a natural state or is it a deficiency state? So we've talked about the decline in estrogen. Now, from a allopathic medical point of view, estrogen's gone and that's a problem. And so this is where, you know, HRT comes in. And that sort of reinforces the idea that menopause is a deficiency state. We live longer, therefore we need to have estrogen. And there are good reasons for that. You know, it's about managing the symptoms of the transition. It's about reducing the risk of chronic degenerative diseases such as osteoporosis and heart disease. But, you know, as we've talked about, actually our prior health to menopause is a really important factor in that. So whilst I'm not against HRT, I think it's important to understand that actually there are alternatives. And there are alternatives that are just as effective in terms of managing that transition into menopause.
What are some of the alternatives in herbal medicine that can be helpful?
In order to understand that, it's important to understand how a medical herbalist works. So it's not a case of just giving a single herb. So if somebody were to come and see me with menopause, we would have a chat, we'd have a long, very long conversation, probably take an hour to an hour and a half, about everything from, you know, childhood illnesses, diet, lifestyle, stress levels, medical history, everything that's going on, all of the different symptoms that were going on. And then we would work together in order to find the right combination of herbs for that particular person. So every herbal medicine is personally tailored to an individual. So it's not a case of just, oh, take this one herb. It could be a combination of 5-10 different herbs that are working synergistically together in order to help A, the underlying things that are going on, but B, also the symptoms and to help find relief from those. Now, that doesn't mean that herbs don't have estrogen-like effects. And there are some herbs, people will have heard of black cohosh, but there are others such as peony, Chinese angelica, and some Chinese herbs, which actually have an estrogen-like effect. And these, from a geeky point of view, they contain something called triterpenoid saponins or steroidal saponins. We don't really understand how they work on the body, but we think that interact with receptor sites in the central nervous system, and that helps to manage that transition of declining estrogen. So we're not trying to replace estrogen by using these herbs. What we're actually doing is trying to manage the fluctuations which are causing the symptoms.
I see. Okay. So it's matching the herbal medicine. I suppose people have different effects from herbal medicine, so it's finding the right combination for each individual person to deal with the symptoms. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So, for example, if somebody came in with really, really bad night sweats and hot flushes, you know, we could take, you know, let's take one herb as an example. So sage. Now, sage has an estrogen-like effect on the body, but it also prevents sweating. So it's really great treatment for menopausal hot flushes and night sweats. But, you know, if stress was a picture as well, and actually that stress was contributing to the night sweats, and actually it was causing insomnia, which were making sleep an issue, then you might want to include something such as hops as well, which, you know, hops are a phytoestrogen, but they also regulate luteinizing hormone surges. So they're very specifically used for insomnia caused by flushing. So you can see how then you can start to build up a combination of different herbs based on what's going on in an individual.
Can you get these herbs in your normal high street store like Holland & Barrett or wherever else it might be?
You can. So I use herbs that are produced by suppliers that provide herbs just to medical herbalists. And these are very, very strong. They're much stronger than the herbs that you can buy over the counter. But you can do things at home. So, for instance, if you've got hot flushes, you know, get half a dozen sage leaves, soak them in some lemon juice overnight, and then drink the lemon juice every morning for 7 to 10 days. And actually, that can really help to control hot flushes and sweating. But it also helps to improve digestion and concentration as well. So that there are things that you can do at home. But from a medical herbalist point of view, we use quite strong herbs. We're licensed to be able to use things that are not, that you can't buy over the counter.
Brilliant. Is there any type of herbal medicine that's prescribed at all that you know of?
What do you mean by prescribed?
As in from a doctor?
So I think some doctors, well, I know some doctors do work with herbalists. When I was training, I was working in Whips Cross Hospital, and there are herbalists that work within hospital setting as training clinics. Because it can be really effective for some conditions. There are doctors that know a little bit about herbs and may suggest it, but they don't have the same sort of training to the level of depth that we have in terms of understanding the pharmacology and how herbs work on the body.
Talking generally now about herbal medicine, mm-hmm. in different conditions, etc., it might be a good idea for health professionals to become more familiar with herbal medicine because I mean it's huge. It's the herbal medicine market is huge, and I've heard people saying to me, I did my own research, I got this herb, and actually it worked better than, you know, what I was advised by some health practitioners. I think there needs to be more awareness in the general, you know, in the health industry around that.
I mean, from a personal perspective, you know, I was diagnosed with something called endometriosis, which is a condition that affects women's wombs. Now, I had all sorts of treatments. You know, I had surgery, I had a chemically induced menopause, but actually the side effects of that were really horrific. I was in pain every single day, and it was far better for me to not take the treatment that was making me out of pain because the side effects were so bad. Now, when I decided to try herbal medicine, and it went from being in pain every single day to being in no pain at all after 3 months of treatment with herbs. And, you know, there were no side effects. You know, I just wasn't in pain.
That's amazing.
And it was incredible. You know, it was just completely life-changing for me. So it really can work and it can be really effective. So yes, I'm all for, you know, if anybody is listening who's a medical professional who wants to learn a bit more about herbal medicine, come and talk to me, because I would love to support them in learning a bit more about herbal medicine.
Fantastic. We're just going to another quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living. We've been doing this for over 40 years. Every year, More and more people are living satisfying lives completely cruelty-free. Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, Victoria, let's talk about men. All right. So, how can men help the situation? I've got two questions here. Okay. Let's start with how men can help the situation with a lady that's going through the menopause. And then the second question I want to ask is, how can men having more awareness around the menopause help them? So let's start with the first question.
Okay.
How can men help, you know, the ladies going through the menopause?
Make sure you've got a good supply of 70% chocolate.
It's a good one. I like that, Victoria.
But alternatively, actually just being aware of it and being aware of the impact that it can have. You know, I work with many women who they come to me in a state of desperation. And, you know, some of them, they're like, I think my marriage is falling apart because I'm so low. I'm so exhausted. I don't have energy to put in. And actually, you know, then they leave and they say, actually, I think you've saved my marriage. But having an understanding about what they're going through and giving them a bit of a nudge to look after themselves a bit more, take the pressure off a little bit by saying, do you know what? This is going to be my responsibility and you can just don't need to worry about that because I'm going to look after that and you go and take 15 minutes to yourself, can be a massive thing.
Is there anything else men can do? I'm sure there's more. It's okay if we want to keep it there.
No, I'm sure there's loads, but it depends on your relationship, right? So you will know the women in your life, and it doesn't have to necessarily be your partner. It could be friends. You'll know the women in your life the best. You know, if you can recognize that there's something up with them, allowing them the space to explore that and nudging them to get a bit of support. Because the worst thing is, you know, women feel like they're going completely crazy. You know, there's all of this weird stuff happening and, you know, it's like, I don't know what's going on. I feel like I'm having a nervous breakdown because it's just this whole combination of different stuff happening and reassuring them that they're not having a nervous breakdown, maybe very gently, mentioning the word menopause and throwing that in there and just encouraging people to get the support that they really need.
It's also about men listening when the person's talking, you know, because they're going to, I'm guessing the person's going through a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. And as I've said, the ladies in the past have spoken to me about menopause and what they're going through. And not women I was in relationships with, just women generally in my professional field. Mm-hmm. And they will just talk openly about it because I'm guessing they're going through so much. Mm-hmm. And I noticed, just for example, as I mentioned, listening. Mm-hmm. Was a big one, just to, you know, what they're going through. Because I think anybody, it helps anyone to kind of, you know, listen to what someone's saying.
Yeah.
And get letting that person kind of offload, if you like.
Yeah definitely. But also having the understanding, you know, if you're in a long-term relationship, and that could be a friendship, but it could also be with a significant other, and you are watching them change and, you know, noticing that actually they're feeling overwhelmed, being there to support is really important. So definitely listening, definitely having some understanding, and yeah, encourage people to get some help.
Now, with men understanding more about the menopause, how can that help men as well?
So men also have a hormone transition. Now, whereas with women, it happens over quite a short period, and it's quite concentrated and it makes us go all a little bit loopy and go, you know, things go all a bit weird. The same thing happens to men. over a much longer time scale, men's testosterone levels decline, and actually that can lead to very similar symptoms that women experience with menopause. It may not be as intense, because it's happening, the decline is happening more gradually, so it may not be so noticeable, but it could be. You know, for some men, they can start to feel a bit lower. They can get muscle aches and pains, which again related to that magnesium deficiency. They could even get hot flushes. You know, so there are many different things that can happen within men, you know, for men that are similar. And, you know, again, it's not really well researched and it's not really spoken about very much, but there are things that you can do, and there are herbal things that you can take to help really support those testosterone decline.
Thank you very much. That's very interesting. Is herbal medicine safe?
I would say so, yes, it would be the short answer. Now, I think there is lots of research about herbs, and there's lots of research about the medicinal uses of herbs. But that it's safe when used in a context. So let's take black cohosh that I mentioned earlier. There was the safety and efficacy of it was questioned after there was a lady in Australia which started it, who reported having developed hepatitis after taking black cohosh for a week. And that prompted an investigation from many different authorities in Europe, North America. And they looked at what was really going on with that herb. And they actually concluded that it really is a safe herb. But in rare cases, when there's an underlying autoimmune condition or there's a pre-existing liver problem, actually there's a small risk that other things can help. Now, medical herbalists are trained to understand what's going on in the body. From a Western allopathic medical point of view, so we learn the same diagnosis skills and the same understanding of the body as a GP. And we also understand how to notice when there are red flags, so how to look at whether there are other things going on, other underlying health conditions. We know when to refer to ensure that people are getting the best health support that they need. We know when to, like, people need investigations in order to be able to, you know, really see if there's something else other than, for example, menopause going on. And because we're able to pick up those red flags, what we can do then is take herbal medicines and take herbs that really are safe for that person. So we pick the best plants for that person in terms of efficacy, but we also understand how they might interact with drugs they may be taking. And so that will give us, you know, be able to make sure that people aren't taking things that aren't safe for them.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you for that. Because on the whole, I would have thought, like, generally speaking, herbal medicine, I've always heard it's actually quite safe to use, but
yeah.
Obviously, each individual person to themselves, underlying health conditions may affect things. So, again, maybe it's about the person just getting some advice, you know.
Sure. On the whole, they are safe and effective. I think where it's important to seek, you know, the support of a herbalist is if you're taking any medications, because actually, you know, these are medications. It's not just that, you know, you're not just having it in your food, you're taking a medicinal dose of a plant, so it's quite strong, and therefore understanding how that interacts with the body, how it may interact with other medications is really important.
Brilliant. Why is it important to seek professional support for when you're going through the menopause?
Well, firstly, from a herbalist point of view, again, picking the right combination of herbs and making sure that what you're taking is safe and effective, but also understanding that it may not be menopause that's causing the symptoms. So a lot of the symptoms that we experience could be indicators of something else going on. So, for example, hot flushes, migraines, and palpitations. They could be PMS, they could be stress. But hot flushes and sweating could also be a sign of hypoglycemia, which could be an indication of potential onset of diabetes. Having low energy, for example, could be menopause, but it also could be a whole bunch of underlying medical conditions such as hypothyroidism or blood fluctuations. With as we're going into menopause, there's a lot of irregular bleeding, and you know that could be just normal hormone fluctuations, irregularities, but actually it could be fibroids or polyps or cervical or uterine cancers. So if you're having a whole bunch of symptoms, being firstly having that knowledge of your body and really being able to understand what's going on in your body, but then being able to talk to somebody with a medical background and saying, do you know what, this is happening, is this correct? You know, or is this, you know, or is there something else going on? And having the confidence, because you know your own body, to be able to push if you think that something's not quite right.
And, you know, that's a very, very good point, because, I mean, I've done interviews about a number of different conditions, and often the conversation that comes up is the difficulty in diagnosis because some of the symptoms overlap with other health conditions. And that's worrying, isn't it? So you're getting these conditions, which could be a host, you're getting these symptoms, which could be a host of other conditions. And now you've got to try and narrow it down.
Yep.
To just which is the right one so you can get the right treatment. Yep. And if you're misdiagnosed, you might be treated for something you haven't got. That's a real nightmare.
Yeah. I mean, the human body. So like I mentioned earlier, I did my first degree was in physics. Physics, everybody thinks, oh, physics is really hard. Physics is really simple by comparison to the human body. We have no idea how the human body works. We just guess. You know, it's an educated guess, and of course we have some understanding, but you know, as the research goes on, we learn more and more about the human body and how it works. So for instance, recently there's a lot of stuff coming out about the gut microbiome and how that impacts the body. Now, we haven't got a clue really about the gut microbiome. We have indications, you know, we know that actually it can affect our mood, but it can affect our digestive health. But in affecting our digestive health, actually it can affect lots of other things as well, because that could lead to nutrient deficiencies if we're not able to absorb those nutrients because there's something going on in our digestive system. So it's really quite complicated. And then, you know, we've talked a little bit about stress. So again, we don't really understand the full weight of the emotional impact that has on our body. You know, we know that stress can lead to all sorts of different types of illnesses, but do we really understand how, you know, for instance, an emotional trauma or grief can actually impact on the physical health, or you know, if we're suppressing emotions, how that impacts on our physical health? So it's really quite a complex picture, but it's also a very fascinating picture. And the more we learn to understand our own bodies, you know, we're all different, we're all unique. The more we understand our own bodies, the more we listen to it, the more we're able to recognize when something's not quite right. And by recognizing something's not quite right, we can then actually, you know, have a collaborative relationship with our healthcare professional and explore together what's going on. And by having that understanding ourselves and having, you know, a healthcare professional, it doesn't matter where, a healthcare professional who can actually just talk and really, you know, help you to unpick what's going on, is essential for good health, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, I've spoken to health professionals a lot in the past before, and their knowledge sometimes is only as good as the tests that exist to be able to identify what the test results were. Because the human body, absolutely, I mean, I've said this to loads of people, just generally speaking, it's a very complex area. We're still discovering, we're still learning about the body, and mankind has come, you know, thousands of miles forwards about it, but we're still learning, in effect.
Yeah, I mean, if you take, for example, if you take the relationship between menopause and stress, you know, so our hormones are controlled by something called the pituitary gland, which lives in the brain. So I like to think of that as the hormone control center. Now, that is linked to something called the hypothalamus, which influences our emotions, our weight, sleep, appetite, but also things such as creativity, thought, and memory. So when the hypothalamus is heavily influenced by stress, and so you have this picture where, you know, the pituitary gland is having control over estrogen levels in women, and, you know, the sex hormones. You've got stress hormones being produced by the adrenal glands, which are then influencing the hypothalamus, which is influencing the pituitary gland. And therefore, how can you tell whether or not something's menopause or stress? You know, and it's why we get the sort of strange combination of symptom pictures that we get with menopause, you know, things like, you know, losing the memory of the names of things. It's a really common issue in menopausal women. That can happen with stress and it can happen with menopause. Or, you know, like just feeling like you're losing your mojo or you're not quite as lively. Again, stress or menopause. And then, you know, looking at this emotional regulation, you know, a lot of women come and they say, actually, I just cry all the time, or I'm angry. You know, women who are very mild mannered, all of a sudden are raging. And, you know, again, it's this, you know, this really strange, the more they rage, the more it affects the hormone levels and you end up in this cyclical thing. So it's such a complicated picture within the body. And we don't know how to unpick it. You know, we can even as herbalists, you know, we can make interventions in certain aspects of it, but those interventions, you know, we don't really understand how they work. You know, even from an allopathic medicine point of view, we don't really understand the impact that it may have longer term. You know, it's just complicated.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Victoria, thank you so much for today. That's been great and really useful. Where can people find you if they want to use your services or find out more information and that kind of thing?
So I have two websites. So I've got one for the herbal medicine generally, which is thelivingherb.com. But if you're particularly interested in menopause, then I've got naturalmenopausesolution.co.uk.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Victoria, for today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for allowing me on the show.
And thank you to our listeners. You know, you can find me on Instagram at GavinJ417. Until next time, take care.